Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nicol, who's happy. Well, should be happy, and of course, with his former side Liverpool beating Leicester in the Premier League on a Monday, they cruised by. And they showed exactly why Leicester are in so much trouble. Curtis Jones, nice couple of goals for him within a matter of 3 minutes. And Alexander-Arnold smacking a free kick home in the second half to give Liverpool a victory. A victory that mathematically means they can still catch Newcastle and Manchester United for a place in the Champions League. Meanwhile, for Leicester, they are in huge amount of trouble. Take a look at where they stand at the bottom of the table. It's 2 points that separate them from safety, but remember, there's only two games remaining. Right then, let's welcome in, shall we? Frank Leboeuf, Mario Melchior are with us, but let's start with the Liverpool man. Are Liverpool good?
It's very hard to tell.
But they're looking good again.
Compared to where they were, they look good, but it's hard to tell. The fact is that they look a little bit more normal. They look a little bit more like the Liverpool we thought we were going to see this season, or we hoped to see. But unfortunately, it's too little too late. I mean, they've had a good run.
A great run.
Yeah, but they've also had a good run of fixtures. I mean, Leeds, Forest, West Ham, Tottenham, Toiling, Fulham, Brentford and Leicester City. So, I guess the argument
before this run, they were losing against these sort
of... Well, that's the argument, is that... I don't know is the answer to the question.
So let me ask you another question. What's changed? This tactical move for Trent Alexander-Arnold, has that been a big difference?
For Trent Alexander-Arnold, yes. But... here's a problem. Here's a problem, Dan.
Okay.
I'm trying very hard to try and be very, very nice to Liverpool, but
haven't really been that nice at all.
But the fact is, when it doesn't matter, when it doesn't count, when your season's dead, all of a sudden everybody starts playing better. That's not enough. That's not good.
But that's better than the other way it could go. Surely.
I'm sorry. This season can't come to an end quick enough for Liverpool.
Wow.
They might be 1 point off United, but United and Newcastle are not going to be dropping points, and Liverpool are not going to get in the top four. Yes, they're winning games. It's always good to win games. I'm sure if you go to the training ground and in around the club, everybody will have a smile on their face. But unfortunately, you don't get anything for putting a run together when your season's already dead.
Wow.
I mean, it's just the truth.
Frank, are you on the same page as Stevie? Too little, too late from Liverpool, no matter how they finish the season?
I think it's too late. I don't think that Newcastle and Manchester United are going to drop, enough points for Liverpool to get into the Champions League. But I find Stevie a bit harsh in a way that Liverpool had many injuries during the season. Yeah, they didn't play well, but you have to put that, in the balance in a way that, when you don't have your best players and some of the players who can bring something different, like Jazz did today, or maybe some others, it's maybe the reason why they couldn't find, the right, again, balance to find the right team. I found today the shape of the team very, very, very good organized. Fabinho and Henderson doing the job fantastically, I think, in the middle of the park. And at front, with the help of Jones, they've been very dangerous. At the back, again, he's still shaky at some point, but offensively, when I see Alexander-Arnold going into the middle of the park, kind of a number 10, I love it. I mean, that's the greatest idea that Klopp had this season. It doesn't resolve the defensive aspect of the game, but offensively, I found them very sharp and Leicester didn't exist.
Mario, how would you have coped with that positional change that we're seeing from Alexander-Arnold?
Oh, I like it a lot. I think, look, we don't have to talk about him on the ball because everybody knows, as defenders, Stevie and myself, we both mean, but, and Frank. But just having a player that knows so much and has so much quality on the ball, that's a different level. But then there comes the other part. So I think pushing him in the middle of the park, it just helped everybody. It helped him in confidence and it helped the team in knowing you have someone there, you lay the ball off to him and he can distribute to positions that they normally can't, because regardless of whoever is playing there. But then in the middle of the park, I also felt like, the young boy Jones, he stepped up. Okay, of course, he scored the two goals in the first game that they played against each other, but today, like, it comes, there was a moment where he went through and he had a time where people were like sometimes questioning his attitude, you understand, because he's so confident and so much believe in himself. But today, scoring two crucial goals gives him a momentum in the sense of, because he always felt like, I have to be part of this team. And I think this will move him closer to what he wants to achieve. So I enjoyed watching him. And for the rest, I mean, guys, come on, that free kick from Trent. Come on, we got to say something. Because when we go at him, when he's doing bad, people are talking about him. But I am the first to say, wow, what a goal was that free kick. Oh, my God.
Whew. Can Curtis Jones keep this level up? Obviously impressed Marion and a lot of others today. Is he a future starter for Liverpool?
I wouldn't stick my neck out and say yes.
Goodness me, he's missed the negative pass.
Well, I don't know what you want me to say. You should have told me before we started.
No, that's good.
No, the start of next season is huge for Curtis Jones. Because Curtis Jones, in my opinion, is reaching the stage where he has to decide whether he's going to get in this team or not. Because he's been around for, nearly 2 years now? So it's coming to the stage, and we're actually all talking about Liverpool needs a new midfield, and there's not one of us mentioned Curtis Jones, I don't believe. Certainly don't remember. So if Curtis Jones can do in the future what he did today consistently, then yes, he'll be in the team.
But you don't think he can?
I would suggest that they need to try and bring some players in the middle of the park. But it's up to Curtis Jones to prove me and more importantly, Jurgen Klopp wrong.
As we mentioned, of course, that win today for Liverpool mathematically means they could still catch Newcastle and Manchester United for a place in the Champions League next season. The bookies, actually, it's quite short, 11-8. They seem to think Newcastle are going to drop points. Let's just remind you, shall we, of the remaining games that these three sides have. Liverpool just have those two matches remaining. That's Villa at Anfield and then away at St Mary's. Newcastle got Brighton, Leicester, then they're at Chelsea. What do you think, Mario? Any chance we could see Liverpool catch either of these teams?
It's going to come down to one has to slip up, you know, and I think that's what's going to be. Look, I always say this, like the same way we talk, you understand, I don't want to jump too quick to Arsenal, but you just want to finish your season as high as you can go. And the guys already jumped into it, you understand, they had the injury. Then they lost the momentum. There was even a moment when I saw Klopp talking, and I hadn't seen it many times, interviews of him, where he couldn't really find what the real problem was in his team. And now that you see them winning again, I saw him today even when one of his players should have released the ball and he got angry. Like back in the day, it was like, you kind of let, he let the emotions go. But I think now it's going to come down to see if someone slips up. But come on, Newcastle is the one that is, you know, definitely going for, I think this season they want to finish up well. Next season, I'm worried about them. Man United, because Ten Hag, this is first time that he's handling a team like that. He does not want to slip up. So that's why the question is going to come to see, you understand, can they do it? And I like the guys already mentioned, it's going to be really tough for them.
Yeah, I think they have to slip up twice, really, don't they? They can afford to lose at least one match. Meanwhile, for Leicester, they can afford to lose absolutely nothing. They have been shocking this season, and even sacking Brendan Rodgers hasn't got the reaction that they were hoping for. Southampton are down, obviously. Who will be joining them? According to the bookie, look at that. Leicester City are 8-1 on now to go down. Leeds United 11-4 on. Let's just remind you of those remaining games, shall we? Just two matches remaining. And you take a look at that Leicester schedule and it is horrible. At Newcastle and then home against West Ham. Leeds isn't much better at West Ham than home against Spurs. Everton at Wolves, Bournemouth, you definitely take that. Forest, Arsenal, Palace, I think you'd take that as well, wouldn't you, Stevie? Yep. Leicester in big trouble.
Yeah, 100%. I can't come up with one reason that they won't go down.
Right.
Because there are so many things that are wrong with them.
But they have good players, though. They have some good players within that.
Do you know, if you look at James Maddison, that's a great example. This is a guy who got put in the England squad because on the ball, he can make things happen. But he's a passenger when you don't have the ball. And if you're playing in a team that's struggling, then you're not going to get the ball. And he didn't get it again today. And so when he doesn't get it, he contributes absolutely zero. So you're a man down before you start. You add to that the rest of them, just for all kinds of reasons, whether it's whether it's Harvey Barnes, who's been out for so long that can't get his form back. You've got Tielemans, who knows he's leaving. And I don't care who you are, when you're leaving somewhere, that there's a little bit missing when you step on the field. And the defence has been a shambles the whole season. Faiz coming in has not helped any at all. Soonshine didn't play because he's been that bad. Johnny Evans, unfortunately, has been struggling with injuries, isn't 100%. I mean, there are so many things wrong. The goalkeeper, you wouldn't have the goalkeeper in your net. Mm-hmm. And they're playing Newcastle next? Yeah. No, this team's done.
Frank, do you agree?
I have to agree. And it's crazy because, as you just mentioned, Dan, you know, the players that you see, the individuals are with talents. And I'm pretty sure that I can bet with you that half of the squad will be either in the Premier League or any championship in Europe, in the best championship in Europe, because they're going to go away from Leicester and they're not going to play in the championship and they're going to do well next year. They couldn't find the chemistry. And today, they sang together without no reaction. There is no leadership, no self-beliefs, no beliefs whatsoever to working together. There is no soul anymore in that team, and that's sad because Leicester is known for playing with their heart, fighting till the end, and that was something we don't see this season, and I don't see a reaction. And according to the schedule that they have, how they can not go down, it's impossible.
A lot more, of course, discussion on relegation and indeed the title on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to go over there and subscribe to ESPN FC. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
A victory at the weekend against Espanyol saw Barcelona wrap up La Liga title with still four games remaining. The front page of Mundo Deportivo says champions. Meanwhile, Marca, a member of Madrid-based newspaper, says they deserve it. Well, the parade was today. What a parade it turned out to be. Take a look at the scenes here. Thousands and thousands of fans lining the streets of Barcelona to celebrate what is, of course, their first title since 2019. Xavi's first title as a manager, of course, bringing them La Liga title. For more on this, let's talk him in, shall we? Sid Lowe joins us from Spain. Sid, looking at those scenes, you kind of forget, I suppose, because the manner of which they've won this, how important this title is to the fans.
Yeah, and I think it really is. It's very significant indeed. And one of the things that makes this so interesting is that, of course, we've watched Barcelona over the years occasionally feel like winning the league title wasn't such a big deal. Now, you just mentioned the fact that this is the first league title since 2019. Remember in August of 2019, so 3 months after the end of that season, 18-19 season, when Messi had promised the Champions League, he took the microphone in those in that pre-season presentation and said, I think one day we will realise how difficult it is to win the league title. Barcelona had won 8 of the previous 11, but they didn't celebrate 2019. There wasn't a bus parade like there's been today, partly, of course, because they won it just in the build-up to the game at Anfield, which, of course, famously they lost, but also because of that sense that winning the league was just kind of what Barcelona did. It was just expected. And I think one of the reasons for the scenes today is the fact that it's been since 2019, since they last won it. I think it's the fact that they know that, of course, this is the first league title in a post-Messi era, that this wasn't necessarily expected, that they know they've come from a period of crisis. They know that they have really big financial problems. And so I think there's a sense of, despite all of these things, Barcelona have won the league and won the league very well with four games still to go. And I think there is a sense of kind of re-evaluating what it means to win the league title. And so in that sense, this has felt more significant, more important than it was back in the day when they were winning it, but hoping to go on and win the Champions League as well.
But I imagine, Sid, overall, big picture, this is seen as a stepping stone to getting back to the Barcelona way. Because obviously, as much as they can celebrate winning La Liga, disappointing elimination in the Europa League, humiliated in the Champions League, Copa del Rey semi-final beaten by Real Madrid, it hasn't gone all their way, but now it's all about focusing on the positives. But we know what fans' expectations are like when it comes to big clubs like Barcelona. What does this season do to their expectations looking ahead?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's another important part of this. That's part of the reason why this is seen as a big deal, because of exactly that. Because this is seen as the, if you like, the first step towards Barcelona being on their way back. Because I think when you look at the situation they were in, when you look at the economic crisis, and we're talking about a club that's got $1 billion worth of debt, when you look at the fact that Messi had departed, that sense of an end of an era, it's not just about winning the league, although that's very important. It's about what that symbolises. That idea that Barcelona can compete again. And you're right, it comes in the context of European failure. And bear in mind that a European failure is, well, it's quite literally double, isn't it? Because in the space of basically a year, you've seen them knocked out of Europe four times. Because both times they got knocked out of the Champions League and then out of the Europa League. And that does them a lot of damage. And that helps to, if you like, enforce that idea that Barcelona are not yet back amongst the European elite. Remember that Gerard Piqué comment after they were beaten by Bayern Munich. This is what there is. This is the reality that we face. And I think what this league title does, as well as being important in its own right, is it says this is a step in the right direction. Xavi Hernandez has spent a lot of this season, right to the very end, talking about this being a team in transition, that it's a team that's still being constructed. And if you can win the league title while being constructed, it suggests, of course, or at least this is what they hope, that you're on the right track.
But what's interesting, it's been constructed in the end around an incredible defence. I think it's fair to say Ronald Araujo has been Barcelona's best player. How are the fans reacting to that, seeing such a shift in the style, which of course they've been accustomed to in the past?
Yeah, I mean, if there's one person who maybe makes you think it wasn't Araujo, it could be Ter Stegen. So if you're talking about a central defender and a goalkeeper, I think you're right. The focus has been on the defence. This is a team that's won 1-0 11 times this season. A third of their games have been 1-0 victories. They've only conceded 13 goals. And you could see last night that Ter Stegen was furious to have conceded those two from Espanyol. He has the best shot save statistics in the whole of Europe's five top leagues. And it's very much been based on that, on not conceding, on winning tight games and winning them consistently. What do the fans think about this? I think under normal circumstances, there might be a bit of grumbling about this. I think we've seen this with different managers and with different teams. But again, we come back to that context. And that context is, who are we and where have we come from? What position were we in? And so I think this season has been an acceptance of the way that Barcelona are evolving into that, an acceptance of the pragmatism about the way that Xavi Hernandez, who is the ultimate defender of Barcelona's footballing faith, has been pragmatic and said, OK, an extra midfielder. OK, we've bolstered the defence. If at times we have to roll up our sleeves and fight, we do that. If at times we can play brilliantly, then great. But that needn't be the be-all and end-all. Now, whether that can last into a second season, when that can last into becoming a permanent identity for Barcelona, I think is a very different question. But I think for this season, in this phase of construction, I think it's actually been largely embraced by the fans. And one of the big things for me that's been really stood out this season is the way the fans seem to have taken it upon themselves to back the team. We're talking about average crowds of 84,000. We're talking about crowds that are noisy, maybe noisier even than they were in those Valverde years when they won a League and Cup double in the first season, when they hoped to win the Champions League. And I think that's partly, again, because of that context, again, because the fans realise where they come from and feel that they have a role to play. So there's been a sense of communion this year. Now, of course, the question is whether that can be continued into the future. But for this season, at least, I think that's been really quite strong.
Sid, we were covering the game at the weekend. Obviously, Barcelona is celebrating in the centre circle, the Espanyol fans storming the pitch. The thought that just came, we kept coming back to was, where was the security? Because surely this could have been, this was expected.
Yeah, and I was listening to Gemma talk about this with you last night, and that sense that she made the point of saying that it was genuinely scary. You know, you genuinely, at first, in truth, when you see fans run on the pitch at the end of a game, it sort of is funny. That first kind of glimpse is funny, isn't it? And you think, actually, no, this is really quite bad. And as you say, the security, you have doubts about that, because I wouldn't go so far as to say this was expected, but I suppose it was a possibility. You know, I suppose it was plausible that this might happen. Maybe not in the numbers that we saw, maybe not so many of them running on the pitch, maybe not quite the degree of aggression that we saw, but there was a degree of plausibility about that. Espanyol's director of security was saying last night that, you know, there was no excuses, there was no attempt to shift the blame. He said last night, we need to look at this and we need to see what we got wrong in terms of the behaviour, of course, of the fans, but also in terms of our management of it. Whether the security was good enough, whether the stewarding was good enough, whether the police force was good enough, although police argue that this is a private issue and they're there for a worst case scenario, not for the basic management of the fans. And I think that's something that we'll see come out in the investigations in the next few days. And also, by the way, the possibility of a really quite hefty fine or even a ban for Espanyol, which, of course, right now, if that was to happen quickly in a period in which they're fighting against relegation, could be really, really bad news for them in purely footballing terms, quite apart from, of course, the question of the image it gives of the club and in terms of the, if you like, the sadness about the way that some of their fans behaved.
It clearly, though, hasn't dampened the celebrations we've seen in Barcelona today. And as you say, Sid, a big step for the club. Their first La Liga title since Lionel Messi left. They can close the door on Messi now, say thank you very much to that era and look forward. Apart from the fact that their president has come out and said, with all due respect to Saudi Arabia, let's not forget, Messi is on a free in the summer. Barca is Barca. Barca is his home. Barca can compete with anyone. The history this club has and the feeling of our 400 million supporters, that's a lot, is so strong. Ah, Sid, it's the head against the heart, isn't it, here?
A little bit, yeah. We're in a position where everybody wants this to happen. I think there's very little doubt about that, given the other alternatives for Messi, given the situation for Barcelona. I think for Joan Laporta, this is emotionally a very, very important issue for him. Bear in mind that he knows that people see him not just as the president who was in power when Messi walked away, but given the way that Messi reacted, given the way that Messi's father reacted after the event, the president who's seen as being responsible for it as well, that he wasn't able to get things in place to be able to keep Messi there and maybe didn't manage it as well as he would like. So I think there's an emotional need for Joan Laporta as well as for Lionel Messi. The question mark now is, how do you do it? How do you convince La Liga that your plan, your economic viability plan, is sufficiently secure to be able to sign Lionel Messi, to be able to cover the financial impact of that? Now, as Laporta's already said in that quote that you read out a moment ago, a big part of that is, well, for a start, he's free. So you're not talking about a transfer fee. So then you've got to come to some sort of agreement about the salary. And that's where the issues will lie and how far Messi's prepared to come down, how high Barcelona can go up. Because, of course, this isn't about them deciding whether or not they'll pay it. It's about the league letting them pay it or not. They have to make around about 200 million euros worth of reductions in terms of their salary mass to be able to get that salary limit down to be able to sign Messi. Now, that, of course, involves players being sold. Of course, it involves players leaving and their salaries being taken off the books. We have to factor in the fact that Piqué has retired and Antoine Griezmann has joined Atletico Madrid. That's worth around about 80 million just on those two players. So they're making steps towards it. The question mark is, can they reach that point? And can they reach that point in time? And how much of a sacrifice are both club and player going to make this happen? Because everybody would like it to happen. Now, that's before we even get onto the footballing side of this, Dan, as to whether or not this actually works.
Percentage chance, Sid?
I think there's a good chance that this happens, but I think it has to happen. Obviously, it has to happen with those other things put in place first. And I think that is a difficult fight. And let's see how that works out. Let's see who they manage to move on, how much money they manage to sell, whether they manage to convince La Liga. I think it's difficult, but I think everybody now is, at the very least, pushing in the same direction. Now, whether or not they get there, I have my doubts about, but I think there is a chance.
So you're suggesting it could be a long, drawn-out summer of me asking you percentage questions, Sid?
I think there's a 100% chance that you and me will get bored of this.
How dare you? I'm glad the dog didn't feature. Thank you very much, Sid. A lot more on Barcelona clinching La Liga on the latest edition of the Gav and Jules podcast. Be sure to check that out.
passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's head back to England then, shall we? They think it's all over. It feels like there's no hope. Arsenal's title hopes in tatters. Arsenal fans don't need a reminder of how things have gone over the last couple of months. But I just want to go into a couple of details that maybe you missed during the game that I'm intrigued to get the boys' angle on. Starting with this. This is what Gary O'Driscoll, who's the Arsenal doctor, had to say on the Martinelli challenge. He saw terrible foul, disgraceful foul. He's a bit sore, but he should be okay. I think he'll be back before the end of the season. Now, I want to show you, before we show you the Casado on Martinelli, the Martinelli on Mitoma challenge.
Now, did anybody ask the doctor about that one?
I don't believe the doctor was asked.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought, I didn't think he would.
Now, the reason I don't really want to go into whether or not he should be sent off, our officials, whatever. What I'm intrigued is about the retribution angle of this, because just moments later, after that challenge, we saw Casado do this to Martinelli. And obviously a horrible challenge, and the doctor summed up of the damage that it did to Martinelli. But this little high five there, as I want to welcome in Frank and Mario back to the conversation as well. How much is that Casado doing one for his mate?
Absolutely, 100%.
And is that kind of an unwritten rule?
Proper teams. Real teams.
Right.
A team that's together.
Yeah.
Sticks together. And if somebody gets it, then you line up behind them to try and be the one that gets them back. I mean, it's absolute old school classic. And the good thing is, as well, from a player's point of view, the way the game's refereed today, and I'm glad to see that recently, the game's getting more physical, which is great in my opinion. But when Martinelli makes that challenge and the referee doesn't really do anything, it's kind of, right, that's good, because that means I can do something here, and there's no way.
So you got a free hit almost.
It's not a free hit. You know, you probably get a yellow in today's game.
Yeah.
But you know the way the referee's going to referee the game, that unless it's completely and utterly stupid, then you're in trouble. But you know you know that if you get them, you're not leaving the field. It's kind of the just lights the torch paper.
Love this. You're more excited about this than Liverpool's chances of doing anything.
The problem is, all these young people growing up today, watching the Premier League of today, the way the game is, don't understand the feeling, how good it feels to have a challenge, have a full-blooded challenge with somebody, knowing that sometimes you're the one that comes off the worst. Because there's not one of us has not been done. There's not one of us gone into a challenge ready for it.
He could have ended Martinelli's career, Stevie.
Hey. That's extreme. I mean, by the way, how many players have you ever seen had their career ended by a challenge on the field?
Oh, I just don't think it's a very good look for the children watching, Stephen. Think of them.
No, I'm telling you. The feeling when you make a challenge is fantastic.
Mario, you're Mr. the Nice Guy on this show. Yeah, there's no way you'd ever do a challenge like that for retribution, would you?
I 100% agree with what Stevie's saying. Stevie's right. When I came to England, it was the same thing happened to me. They kindly explained to me, you got to stand up for yourself. And when you got teammates around you, you stand up for them too. So what Stevie said, he stood up for him. Yeah, of course. I mean, look, when he goes into making the challenge, I always say that some players, if you look really well, they know who to pick. Because you think that, like Casero comes there at the back. Okay, it looks a little bit side back. You saw he was going for the ball and he clipped him. You wanted to take everything with it. Yeah, of course. That's why. If it's a foul, yes. I'm not complaining that it's not a foul. He taps him on the hand. Why? Because he wants to show him, like, hey, I got your back. You played a whole season on one side together. You don't think these guys are going to be partners in crime? No, they're going to back each other. I think this is normal. This is football. And if you can't handle it, you should not play the game, because the game gets really intense sometimes and you should be ready for that.
Mr. LaBeouf?
Well, I guess then, Thomas, you're going to be on your run in that matter, you know, because I'm 100% with the guy. The thing is, for me, it really depends on what Martinelli does before, in between, and especially after. Before, we can see that he aims the players. In between, we know that he hits the players and he's very happy about that. And after, we don't really feel that he's sorry. So he deserves, and I'm very sorry if it's not the example, but he deserves what he gets after that, because he smashes the guy. And turns say, well, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know, there's nothing. I didn't do anything. Why he's on the floor? You know, you want to know why he's on the floor. You're going to know in a minute after why you're going to be on the floor. And that's what happens. I think Caicedo, on top of it, is a little bit clumsy. He could have been worse. He's a little bit clumsy because he misses the first and catches after and with the second pushes, I would say. But the thing is, it's not absolutely fair. It's like the Italian rule. Eyes for eyes, tooth for tooth, you know, you deserve what you did. And that's what it is. And if you look for trouble, you're going to find the trouble. That's a sport of gladiators, you know. We deal with our troubles and our problems, and we are a team. So if one of our guys is hit, don't worry, you're going to be hit by the others. And that's what happened to Martinelli.
I don't think anyone would ever describe Martinelli as a gladiator, Frank. Is it easier when it's a playmaker like that as opposed to, you know, a proper bruiser at the back?
Of course. You can choose your target, so that's true. But in that matter, Martinelli chose to be the target. And that's what it is. Yes, of course, you know, we used to play against crazy guys like Roy Keane, like Vinnie Jones, you know. So you had to pick your right target. I was happy to fight more against Beckham. That was kind of easier.
You'd be targeting me, Frank. Mario, what's interesting, and Stevie mentioned it, it's a sign of a good team that are together. And I don't want to go down a Chelsea road, but I just want to use Chelsea as an example. You couldn't quite envisage that happening this season with this Chelsea side, or could you? Is it something that's an absolute given no matter what the state of the team?
No. When you look at Chelsea now, they don't have it like that. No, they don't have it like that. I think when you look at teams, you got to really look at teams. When teams are doing well, it's always easier to gel together, right? Because you're happy together, you're sad together. Okay, but now they have no happiness. So the only thing they're now trying to achieve is their pride. And when you're building for your pride, it becomes more an individual thing. If you look at Chelsea, is it an individual team? Yes, it's an individual team because they're not playing like a team yet. When I came on, when I joined Chelsea, when I came to Frankie's team, because Frank was already there, I was part of the learning process. I saw how they were doing it, you understand, and how they were handling it. And we had a captain, for example, like a Dennis Wise. Oh, believe me, Dennis Wise was maybe the shortest one in our team. But when things like this kicked off, oh my God, he had your back no matter what. The guy was as little as you can imagine, but when something sparked off, he will be the first there. Did everybody like him? No, some guys didn't like him, but if he's on your team, do you like him? Oh yes, I liked him, because he made sure that everybody was ready to make sure to attack the battle, and he did it for us, and he made sure that he was always leading the line.
As a coach, Stevie, how easy is it to manufacture this, or how organic does it have to be?
No, it has to be organic. Definitely has to be organic. And that should be part of the process of putting a team together.
Right.
Which I'm not so sure. Back in the day, part of scouting was about what type of character you were getting. I get the feeling that these days that the type of characters is probably the last thing that they look at. It's just about, you know, How many goals do you score? Can he do 10 step over? You know, is he going to be a crowd pleaser? Is he going to be this? You know, instead of the nuts and bolts of a team is you have different characters and you put them all together along with the ability and everything else and the way of playing. And so it's about character. And by the way, for those that don't know, Dennis Wise is 5'2".
Yeah.
He was about 60 pounds wet. But I'll tell you what, if he was upset, it was like a wee Spitfire firing into people right. about a foot off the ground at times. So, listen, you didn't mess with Dennis when he was angry, I can assure you.
Speaking of character, some are questioning the character of Arsenal's centre-back, Kiwior, after the first goal they conceded. This is what he had to say about it. I felt contact and lost my boot, and I didn't even see the goal. I hoped VAR would intervene and chalk off the goal, but unfortunately, the ref saw it differently. There's quite a bit of time that spans, isn't there, Steve, from when he goes down to when the ball ends up in the back of the net?
I think his explanation tells you exactly what he was doing. I mean, he's just gambled and thought, well, maybe the VAR, I'll get away with it. It's completely the wrong mentality. Unless the guy's broken your metatarsal or broken a toe or you're going to end up getting stretchered off, then you battle on. And your mentality has to be, I don't care if my leg's just fallen off. Where's the ball? How can I stop it going in the net?
Right.
With this guy's answer, it's absolutely horrible. His mentality is certainly not in the right place.
Frank?
Yeah, about the mentality, I totally agree with Stevie, but the VAR should have done their job. There is a real foul. The guy, you know, hit him in his Achilles, and he should be, the goal should have been disallowed because of a foul. You know, he doesn't lose his shoes on his own. He lost his shoe because somebody stamped on him. And therefore, he should have been disallowed. After, it's his duty to try to stay up and fight even without a shoe. He didn't do it, and he's been punished for that. But I would say that is not fair.
Yeah. Mario?
I totally agree with the guy, because what Frank said, yeah, Fad should have done his job. But come on, guys, you're playing football. You got to make sure. I remember, like, that's why I'm going back. Marcel Desailly, when I came to England, he said to me, listen, my friend, when you mark somebody, it's like your wife. Do you want anybody to come to your office? I said, no. He said, then I make sure the ball doesn't get to that person. I said, okay. So what did the guy do? He goes and touches his boot. Come on now. Are you going to touch your shoe while the ball is being crossed? Even if I had to do it with no shoes on, I headed the ball away, and then I figure out what's going to happen. And I don't think he did that. He should have gone and cleared the ball first and then handled the situation after. What VAR does, and we already know, VAR is not always on your side. Make sure that you get the ball to be on your side instead of trying to question the rest.
I guess, Mario... Mario, so you agree with us? We all agree that he should have stayed up. You know, we didn't say anything else. We're just saying that.
No,
I'm just saying differently from Stevie that the ref should have done the job or the VAR should have done the job. That's it.
Exactly.
But we all agree that the guy should have tried to stay up.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's continue our discussion with Arsenal, and it's something that, of course, people have talked about a lot over the last 48 hours, Frank. And I want to get your take on it. Given that they've only won two matches of the last seven games, people are calling them chokers, bottlers. What's your reaction to that?
It can happen. People are forgetting that Arsenal is maybe the youngest team in that competition, and they lost their mojo. I think Craig mentioned that last week. That's what it is. And when you have a team like Manchester City coming back and being like a roller coaster, beating everybody, it's hard to all the pressure. You know, when you have a racing car, it's the same. When you see a race, you know, it's always easier to follow than to lead. And that's what it is, because when you lead, you look behind you sometimes and you lose control of your car. So it can happen. I remember being in Marseille at the end of my career, and I was playing with young guys and we were leaders. But we knew Lyon, who won like 5 years in a row in France, were just behind us. We lost. We even finished third. because people can cope with that, and you know that you have a better team, because that's what it is. You have a better team, you know, trying to chase you and trying to overtaking you. And I think it's only fair to say that City is better overall than Arsenal, but Arsenal did very well this year, but at the end, it's always the same people who win, the better.
Mario, did Arsenal choke?
I don't think they choke, because people forget the history, right, where Arsenal comes from. They were first a team that were only winning the FA Cups, and people are like, oh, they keep on winning it. Now they're fighting to get to the title. Guys, come on. They've been running it for a long time. I think, okay, of course, if you look back at how much the distance between number two was, okay, they could have done, they should have done better. I don't want to say they could have. They should have done better. But guys, also, becoming second, if someone would have asked them that the other day before the season kicked off, they would have said second. Wow, yes, we would have loved to get it. Now, because they were leading the line for so long, they are saying like, okay, we wanted to be champions. No, but like Frank said, City is just a better team. You know why? Because they have invested in the sense of like, if they have any injury, look what they can put. They can put on, you know, come from the bench. Look what they did this weekend. De Bruyne left out. De Bruyne is one of your best players. You left him out. Okay, Gundogan comes, turns up, and then scores like a for you. Yeah, but that's what Arsenal is a team, but they now have to focus on how can we make it even a bigger team. And now that question has come up, and that's why I think Arsenal lost at the final end of the sprint, is because they have a question in the sense of like the ability that City has, we are not there yet, but they have definitely have the possibilities.
Kevin De Bruyne was, of course, rested at the weekend ahead of Manchester City's midweek clash with Real Madrid. The second leg of this Champions League semi-final is finally poised. Sid, the only one who believes that Real Madrid are going to make it through. Frank, you think it's going to be 4-1. This isn't even going to be a contest.
Yes, because what I saw, and you know, sometimes the truth has to come out, you know, and what I see from Real Madrid is spectacular in the mentality of the team, but football-wise, I think City is better than anybody else. It's why I see City winning that game. They play at home, and you know, maybe the truth will come up and see City showing their superiority to Real Madrid. But I know that I should be cautious with what Real Madrid showed last year and this year again in Champions League. But that's the margin that I see between City and Real Madrid.
Wow. Mario, obviously there's a lot of experience on that Real Madrid team when it comes to nights like this in the Champions League. But you believe still Manchester City can do it?
Yeah, because I think it's team-wise, it might have the energy and this is the moment, but I'm really, really, this is saying it, I still feel like Madrid has so much, and what Frank just said, the only thing is away from home. They're going to England now. You know, when they were in Madrid, if it was the other way around, I probably would have given them the upper hand. But now they're going to, the only thing I think that can make a difference, if they break, and that break is always on, because sometimes how City gets hurt is the way when they leave the 40 yards behind the defensive line. If the Real can capture that, because I think, you know, if you look at Walker, he played a great game against Vinicius. That's why Vinicius went in the park, but then scored an incredible goal. Can he do it again? Let's see, because they hugged each other after the game, but let's see if they will hug again after the game.
Oh, don't mention the hug. Stevie's going to get angry.
Stevie.
Well, City too good?
I think so. I think not just that. I think there's no question that Man City at the start of this game are going to be all over Real Madrid the way Liverpool were at Anfield. That first 20 minutes when Liverpool were 2-0 up.
That's what happened at the Bernabeu as Madrid, well. City were all over them, but Real Madrid got themselves back into the game.
Well, see, that's the other problem. This is not at the Bernabeu. Mm-hmm. It's different when you're at home. You can come back a lot easier when you're at home. I mean, just look at Liverpool against Barcelona. I mean, it's a completely different animal when you're at home. And the difference between Liverpool and Manchester City is that if City put the pressure on that Liverpool did and get 2-0 up, they're not going to collapse the way Liverpool did. They're just not. That's what I see happening. I see City absolutely rattling their cage for the first 20 minutes, getting ahead, and then being smart after that.
We'll be looking ahead to that game in a lot more detail in the next edition of the show. Plus, of course, reflecting on the other Champions League semi-final, Inter against AC Milan. Be sure to join us. Well, Manchester City on course for the treble, aren't they? The Champions League final is June the 10th, the weekend before. It's the FA Cup final as they take on Manchester United. That game live and exclusive on ESPN Plus with coverage starting at 9 a.m. Eastern. Speaking of ESPN Plus, we've got both games for you over the next 48 hours from the Championship playoffs. Tomorrow, Luton Town taking on Sunderland. Sunderland with a 2-1 lead going into Kenilworth Road still?
It is, yes.
Going into Kenilworth Road.
Still.
Meanwhile, all to play for in that other tie, Middlesbrough against Coventry. That was, of course, 0-0 yesterday. And the final, of course, will be live on ESPN Plus. Be sure to stay tuned. Mario and Frank are back with us to answer your questions for extra time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie with us here in the studio. Mario, smile. What are you smiling at, Mario?
Always happy, man, to be with my boys. That's it, man.
Look at that. No, Mario is so happy. He's just the anti-Craig. It's incredible. Frank joined us as well. Let's start off with you, Stevie. Watch Big Sam manage Leeds this weekend in a nice suit. Did you ever wear a suit on the pitch when you managed, or did you always wear the tracksuit?
Oh, no. I had the tracksuit, I had my boots on.
You had boots on?
I used to wear boots.
Why? You're not going to play?
Well, because I was brought up, that's what coaches wore.
Right.
They didn't wear a suit, yeah. or trainers, or... I mean, you look at Germany. I mean, it's almost like a pub league, the way that the coaches are dressed.
Oh, no.
Were they all jeans with the holes in them with trainers?
What's wrong with that?
And a scabby, wee, horrible T-shirt. I mean, it's like...
Oh, yeah, you
weird.
Look great in that tracksuit.
Oh, geezer, bro. I look way better than some of these geezers on the sideline in the Bundesliga.
But I still don't understand why you're wearing boots.
It just felt right.
Oh, yeah?
Aye. And I saw the other coaches used to say to me as well, you know, whenever we used to get together at yes. all the different functions and yep. stuff, they'd go, why do you wear boots? And I'd be like, I don't know.
And it was just you?
I just feel comfortable.
Did Maros wear boots as well?
Aye. Oh, why?
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, why?
Oh, very good. Mario, did you have a preference if your manager wore a tracksuit or a suit?
No, I really didn't care, but I understand what Stevie said. It depends. I think it's time frames, huh? You know, like if you, like the older days, tracksuit, and then later on they start wearing suits. I just think... Be comfortable as a coach. It doesn't really matter. As a player, you don't look at your coach like thinking, oh, he's got to dress fine. No, you got to make sure that he gets the tactics right so we can win. That's what you want.
Frank would have worn a suit, wasn't he? If he was a coach, definitely. Oh, yeah. Frank, you'd be suited and booted.
Oh, yeah, you know, a suit and with a turtleneck, you know, classy, Guardiola.
Oh, God, yes.
Of course.
Yeah, no, he loves a turtleneck, sure. Mario. He's obsessed with them.
Hey, listen, just remember, I played with Frank, so I know.
Yeah, I know, we spent far too much time. Frank, you could wear shorts like I do to restaurants.
Well, no, I wouldn't do that. You know me. No, I don't wanna do that to people. You know, I don't wanna give that picture, an image to the club, you know, that I would be and that would be working for.
Mario, you must wear shorts to restaurants in LA, lovely weather.
You gotta be kidding me. No, man, my time of shorts is finished. The only thing I wear shorts is when I go. No, man, no.
Hey, you, what's wrong with your legs? What's happened
to them? My missus will look at me and say, like, where are you from? No, my friend. Listen, I have a happy life. I like to continue like that. The shorts are only when I maybe play football or I go training. They're away from that. Leave me alone with the shorts.
It's hot, Mario.
Else.
You wanna give your legs a little bit of air?
Don't try to get people on your side. You know, you lost. You know, you.
No, I haven't lost.
It's your problem. If you want to look like a redneck, carry on. You know, enjoy and accept the fact that you're a redneck. But you know, if you want to be a little bit classier, you get rid of the shorts. You know.
I can't imagine you in a pair of shorts.
Which you can't imagine me in a pair of shorts. You've seen me in shorts before.
No, I haven't.
Definitely.
When?
At barbecues and the such like that we've attended.
Well, when?
Barbecue is different. Don't lie to me.
I've been at your house to barbecue.
Barbecue's of course.
Oh, you know, Nick.
I have.
You haven't.
I am. Like, right, okay, fine.
Yeah, but Dan, if you go to somebody's place and you're not moving around, yeah, you can put on or go on holiday. But then you think I'm going to leave my house and go for lunch in a restaurant in a pair of shorts? No, come on, my friend.
You think, like...
Dan does. When you think Dan of, does. Think of every my time. Legs,
think of my legs, you think of Jack Grealish. Like, that sort of look.
Okay, oh, good luck.
I was thinking Pinocchio.
Yeah, definitely.
I was thinking Pinocchio.
No, I've got calves like you wouldn't believe, Stevie. Roberto Carlos, yeah, right, Jack Grealish, there's something else. Don't you worry about that. Right, Frank, did you have any interactions with two of the most famous club presidents in French football history, the late Bernard Tapie or your former club Marseille and the retiring Olympic Lyon boss Jean-Michel Aulas?
Yes, I knew Bernard because Bernard hired me in Marseille. In fact, he was the chairman of Marseille. So I spent a year with him and I know him very well. I saw him a year before he passed away, and he was somebody that I appreciated and I knew very well. Jean-Michel Aulas, I know him. I met him a couple of times. I saw him a couple of times in Lyon. He's a very appreciated chairman, does very well for the club. And he's a big entrepreneur. He's a big successful entrepreneur. And he's two people that I love because of their mentality, their character. They are all chairman, I would say. You know, people who can go in the dressing room like chairman do in France, and if they're not happy, they're gonna say it. I'm not sure they understand very well football, but they are very much with their bloods, with their feelings, and I love those two guys. Yeah.
Stevie, if Gabriel Jesus had been fit for the whole season, would Arsenal have won the league?
No.
Oh,
I think they've not won the league because of what they've got defensively. Unfortunately, when Saliba got injured, the back line fell apart.
So what am I going to ask next?
I don't know.
If Saliba was fit all season, would they have won the league?
Well, I'm going to say that if Saliba was fit, they wouldn't have had those three draws.
Right.
Now, the Man City game, you can argue could have gone either way, but the three draws I don't believe would have happened.
Right.
Because they wouldn't have lost, three, four, five, six, well, eight goals they lost in three games. That wasn't happening when Saliba was playing.
Right.
So
Jesus isn't the problem, it's Saliba.
No, Saliba, yes.
Do you agree, Frank?
I do, and I mentioned that a lot, you know. Of course, players like Jesus, Odegaard, Saka, and Partey in the middle of the park did very well during the season. But I think the main player was Saliba. And as soon as he got injured, as Stevie said, he changed everything defensively. It wasn't the same. And of course, because Saliba is a tremendous centre-back, and they changed a lot, and they became very fragile then.
Yeah, but then you also have to remember, Jesus started scoring a lot of goals in the beginning, and then he stopped. And then the team still kept on winning, so it wasn't only Jesus, because they kept on winning, and he kept on staying on. Then later on, he got injured, and then the Saliba situation kicked off. That was later in the season, but away from that, Jesus was not only the key figure in the team. I think as a team, I also think like sometimes when you come to the final stroke of a team, right? It happens sometimes your body, you know, like the fatigues and everything starts playing up, and also the experience. Because why did they brought Jorginho from Chelsea over? The only reason was experience, but the only thing, like, there wasn't enough for them to bring him in. But they needed experience because they know what was coming, and look what happened. I think we looked at a team that could great football. When Arsenal was on it, they played beautiful football. But like we all know, Stevie knows, Frank knows, when we were in England, when Arsenal was top, they had everything in line. And when they lost the topness of being so great, it sometimes came down to maturity and understanding of what needs to be done. And I think that is what was the final stroke. So I think next season, they got to work on that part.
Stevie, which club in the top 10 of the Premier League will have the most dramatic change in personnel entering next season?
Oof.
You would think, like, looking at it, looking at the rumours, Brighton are going to struggle to hang on to some of their big players, aren't they? Like McAllister, your boys want him.
Mm-hmm.
Casero as well.
I don't... That's a tough one to answer.
I know, that's why I thought I'd give you the answer, because I thought you'd say it.
No, I was thinking in terms of people signing players, not teams losing players.
OK.
Because I don't believe that the Brighton are going to lose a lot of players, personally.
But why?
I think they may lose two.
Well, two big ones.
But it's two players.
Well, two
We're talking about
players,
the most big. Dramatic. So two
quite
players.
Dramatic. I take
two players
in. You take two
dramatic.
Important players. My two star players in Casado and McAllister out of my team. That's quite dramatic.
Well, you can think what you want. I'm just telling you,
so
two
you
players is
then?
Not dramatic.
You've been stalling and.
I'm actually trying to think of who's going to make some signings.
Okay.
And there's a lot of teams need signings. Liverpool do. Man United do.
Right. Spurs. Pochettino.
I mean, Newcastle.
Pochettino.
Newcastle probably have the money to make a lot of signings.
Right.
And for them to solidify the top four, mm-hmm. they probably would need to make three, four, five signings. So there's a little difference between three, four and five, Dan, to two.
Why? Well, if two leave,
there's three of it. For a start, there's three difference.
So then what happens? What do you do with the two? Two leave, two come in. That's four already, on your point.
Shut up.
Stevie, would you ever eat a shepherd's pie made with plant-based meat?
Not a chance.
Oh, have you ever even tried plant-based meat?
I have had a burger with plant-based meat.
Right.
It's absolutely rotten.
Oh, no.
It's completely and utterly tasteless.
Oh, dear.
Unless you blitz it with sauce or anything, it's completely tasteless.
Oh, no.
You can eat proper shepherd's pie on its own with nothing else.
Right.
A little bit of seasoning and all that.
Oh, okay.
But your plant-based stuff, no, not for me.
Mario, where do you stand on shepherd's pie?
I'm not as experienced as Stevie is regarding shepherd's pie because I played in Wigan, so of course I ate some pie. But no, I had it only with chicken. But I don't know.
Oh.
It's like I've never had any shepherd's pie in a different because I don't eat beef and pork. But I never had it in a different way, so that's why I cannot answer that question.
Yeah, you're not missing much. When we played golf, I've worn shorts as well, Stevie. You've definitely seen my legs before. You've just decided not to remember it. Just decided.
I don't get a picture.
You just decided why? Because you were so impressed with my legs.
No.
And they were so different to what you expected.
No.
Come on, Greenish, next question.
Right, Frank, why are you in a rush? You miss them, Frank.
I bet they're white.
Of course they're white. What other colour are they going to be?
That's the perfect reason for not wearing shorts. You've got white legs.
You wear shorts.
I don't have white legs.
What do you mean, white legs?
I don't have white legs.
What colour are they?
I've got weather-beaten legs.
Veiny and horrible legs.
Weather-beaten.
Start, bench, or drop. Okay, Mario, here we go. You played against all these players. Start, bench, or drop. In their prime, Mesut Ozil, David Silva, Cesc Fabregas.
Fabregas, I start straight away. He was brain was... For me, yes. Oh, then it's because, Silva was just a joy to watch, but I never played with Ozil I've seen in action. So he will definitely be coming on. Ozil will come in and will be coming on for Fabregas, but then Silva, I'm so sorry, man. I like you. I got to do it like that. Because, guys, listen, I'm talking about Ozil, prime Ozil, eh?
They're on
God.
Prime.
Guys, stop. You know what people, because people looked at him like this, but hey, when he was on fire, oh my God, he could make people fall. There's a goal that he scored, I'll never forget, that he controlled the ball, cut back, make people slide past him, and then put it in smoothly. And Fabregas was just a brain on another level. I was against him, and I hated playing against him because he was too intelligent. So that's why I picked him to start. I hate it. Wow. I always looked at this kid, I was like, why are you so clever? And the next time I walk into a restaurant, who's sitting at his table is next to me? It's him. Gets up, comes to me, Mario, how are you? I'm like, man, you just killed me and now you're going to greet me. But hey, that's how life was.
Was he wearing... No, it doesn't matter. Frank!
Well, the big question is that Ozil from Real Madrid, Ozil from Arsenal? That's the main question,
prime,
I think.
Prime, look, it says prime. Prime.
Okay, prime. Prime, I go for Ozil, then Fabregas, then David Silva. Ozil at his prime. Ozil at his prime was a big artist. I mean, the guy was an alien. He was really an alien when he was at his top. But after he became a ghost. That's the problem.
That's unfortunate, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Give me one, take with another. Yeah.
I'm going to go with the boys on David Silva, unfortunately, as brilliant as he was. I'm going to go Fabregas because I think the deciding factor between the two of them would be that Fabregas' prime lasted a lot longer than Ozil prime. I mean, Fabregas...
That's a bit of a cop-out.
No, it's not. Fabregas at 18 was way ahead of the other two, 18 years of age.
Right.
And he lasted longer at that level than Ozil did. So that's why I'm going to go Fabregas. That's why I'm separating them.
OK. That is it. We are done. Me and my little white legs will be leaving the studio as we say goodbye to Mario and Frank. What colour are they? What do you expect? Oh, they're red. OK, we'll be back tomorrow. Inter, of course, taking an AC Milan in the Champions League. We'll be looking back at that and looking ahead to City against Real Madrid.